Welcome to Report Out's Hidden Voices podcasts from around the globe. Report Out is a human rights research organisation and charity based in the UK. Report Out monitors, researches and documents the lived experiences of sexual and gender minority people and their communities in different nation states. We use this information to educate others on the lived experiences of sexual and gender minorities and to campaign and push for social change across the globe. You may notice that we use the term SOGSC, which means sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics. Why do this? Because it's a culturally sensitive umbrella term to cover all sexual and gender minorities. These interviews will consist of SOGSC individuals who live in different nation states, and whilst we'll be discussing the barriers that they face, we will also highlight how they find resistance to them. Welcome to our Hidden Voices podcasts.
Hi, my name's Sarah, I'm from Report Out. Today I'm here with Jason from Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, well, thank you first, Sarah, for having me here on the podcast. I'm from the Southern West Indian Caribbean. My twin island republic is called Trinidad and Tobago. We were part of the British colony during the colonial period. We got our independence in 1962. My country is quite diverse in multicultural in its faith and its people. And our natural resources right now is petroleum and crude oil that is exported. Infrastructure-wise, we're considered rest of the world. When it comes to humanitarianism, we are not on that list. We're below that list. If it has a list to say 1 to 100, we're like really low. But improvements are being made by activists. Things are moving. The wheels are turning.
As a gay man in Trinidad, how did that affect you? How did these developments and the slow progress affect you? As an individual?
For me personally, it's stunted any growth of having a life because there's no protection for being who I am and being open as I am. For someone who is not open, you know, they have the benefit of having one foot in, one foot out in protecting their anonymity and their identity. For me, at a young age, figured out what I wanted and who I am, I didn't need to hide it because my family and friends knew, you know, I made no esteem to hide it from anyone. So it drew more a spotlight on me. So that was one of the negativity, but I wouldn't have changed it. But it came with a lot of suffering and pain from discrimination, from jobs, being thrown out from my parents' home at 15, you know, but going to live with my grandfather, which was a saving grace, you know, for 10 years of my life in structuring me. But after he passed, I had to move on. So just keep on moving place to place on my island. I've covered every stretch of my island in places I've moved to evade problems with landlord when you find out that you're openly gay or you bring friends over or neighbors talk about you, gossip, you know, being kicked out of places that I'm renting, you know. So it is a constant barrage of bombardment personally on your self-identity. And in the West Indies, laws are still archaic. They have buggery laws where you can be jailed for same-sex men being caught for 25 years. There's no gay rights, no protection, no hate crime rights to protect you from a hate crime. You know, the police, they just walk away if something like that happens. It's not recorded, it's not logged. I think now we're in 2020, there's a bit of a change, but not much. I mean, we've gotten the buggery law to be deemed unconstitutional, but it's not been repealed. They've changed, they've tweaked it with lowering the age to 16 years old, increasing the age, but it's remained the fact that they can still jail you and you still don't have any rights to cover and you can still be assaulted.
So you said you were thrown out from your parents?
Yeah, when my mum actually, you know, the rumour was in the neighbourhood, so she came and she asked me one evening. We sat down. I can remember vividly. I was doing the laundry out in the backyard, and she came and she asked me, she said, I need to ask you a question. She said, you know, there's rumours talking about that you're gay and such, and, you know, that's a sin, not in my, you know. And I said to her, well, I am gay. I can't change it. That's who I am. You know, it's not a phase. I remember having a straightforward conversation with her about it at 15. And she said, you can't live here. Same day, packed my bag, my school bag with my books, my duffel bag, my sneakers, my underwear, all that. And I walked out. I stayed out on the streets for about 2 nights. And then a friend picked me up and said, right, I explained to them what happened. I stayed with them for about a week or two, got in contact with my grandfather, and moved to the east of the island with my grandfather for 10 years. Then he passed away. I had no family contact ever since. I didn't see my mother after. That was the last day I ever saw my mum.
So your grandfather was quite accepting?
Yeah, my grandfather was a quite open gentleman. And I say that in the most open terms. He had an open thought about how people live their lives and what is due to you and what is to be questioned and what is not to be questioned, what is to be asked, what shouldn't be asked. And what he passed on to me was, you need to stop, you need to listen, you need to be open, you need to understand, and you need to step and see the other side of the story from that person's vantage point. So for me, that was a cornerstone in my development as a gay, open gay man, right? To have the freedom to know, okay, this is me. It's not going to change. It's going to come with a lot of pain and suffering, because he warned me. He said, it's not going to be easy. People are just going to hate you, just whether you're black. If you're black and you're gay, so you're going to meet people who are just going to be belligerent. And that was a very rough 20 years. Straight on until I made the decision, yeah, it's time to leave my island, because don't get me wrong, I love my island. I made good friends, but there was no protection for me as an individual to have a partner, have a relationship, or even adopt a child, or even, you know, do a surrogate. Those options were in the climate it's in now and was then, and now it still is in. I couldn't see a future. The only future was outside of it. Mm-hmm. So it took a while to gather that, to let that sink in. But when it did, I left. Just closed it and I was gone.
So what do you think caused the difference in attitudes between your grandfather, an older generation, and then your mother, one being so accepting and then the other?
Well, my mum is from that generation of, as I said, West Indians are more British than people think in the thinking. And because you, as a pretty young British person, you know the same. Standard old ways remain thinking of, this is how you do things. You get, you find a job, you get married, you have your kids and such. Anything out of that order is deemed, you know, you get a rhetoric, you're a heretic, or no, that's weird, you're weird, you know.
Not normal.
And it's the same in the West Indies. If you're living on your own and you don't have a wife, or whether you're a man or a woman, and you don't have a husband or wife and living on your own, the neighbours start gossiping. And one thing West Indians know to do is gossip. All right? And they also know how to isolate you. As you, when you've grown up in that community since a baby, knowing your neighbor, John, Samantha, Augusta, when these people turn your backs on you, that's your second family turning your back on you. So for me, it was a decision I made, was I need to be on my own. So I had to cut off myself. And that was a very hurtful part, because a lot of people that I've known from a wee lad, you know, they just weren't there anymore. So I had to just learn to walk alone.
How did you manage just getting up and moving from your mum's to a completely new part of the island to be with your granddad? Did you find another
I didn't. It, well,
a circle of friends, a community.
No, I didn't. I settled on school. I focused on my education. Because one thing my grandfather focused on, he said, if you want to get off this island or do anything, you need your education, you need a certificate, you need a degree, you need a doctor, some whatever, but you need something in paper if you want to get anywhere. So for me, that was a, with all the noise that was going on in the background about my sexuality and dealing with, you know, my friends, you know, isolating me and my family, just blacklisting me. My education, I was focused in my schooling. So that got all of my attention. So I didn't really focus on going out with people and friends. I focused on learning about more within the gay community, because we had little pocket embers of charitable organizations, and more of them focused with HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. And those youngsters who were thrown, young men who are gay, were thrown out of their family homes and such. Most of them had predestined medical issues. But I found very few like myself who were just thrown out for just being openly gay and not hiding it. Mm-hmm. 'Cause a lot of them hid it from their families. I just think I made myself numb, to be honest. I really didn't focus on people. Because I got hurt that much, it made me just numb, and I just focused on the work, which wasn't a good thing because it cut me off emotionally from a lot of meeting good people. But because I was getting a lot of just bad discrimination everywhere I went, if I applied for a job and people were paying attention to me or how I spoke or how I acted, they had a problem, you know. So I said it was their problem in the for me, but it always created an issue. And when they asked, oh, are you gay? I said, yes. And you know, I never hid it. So it's something that always followed me everywhere, where I expected the left foot to drop, where it will start good, and then all of a sudden it will go south very quickly.
So within the gay community that you found, did you find that you were able to identify with others within that community and make friends and...
Yeah, within a small group, it did. Because, as you know, with any, whether you're gay, straight, bi, what, people have agendas. Right? So I met some shifty characters, but I met good ones. So I focused on the good ones. Most of my friends were HIV positive. Some of them, I buried a good few of them during the 90s into the 2000s. But I learned a lot about them that, We fought for equality, awareness, trying to help those who've been forced out of families or attacked, keeping an eye on the night walkers, as we say, ladies of the night, because we had transgender working the streets at night, and it was really dodgy because we had characters, we had a murder spree of transgenders being killed. So they were ending up in parks, parking lots. One was thrown into the sea after being took a blow over to her head. So it was, I remember that was very, in 2006 to 2007, those were very rough nights and days. And then it started up again in 2013 with a bunch of men shooting a transgender prostitute on the street at midnight. Then another one getting strangled. If it was really rough, that was a rough time period from 2006 into 2013.
Do you feel that the police actively investigated these crimes, or do you feel that perhaps they were overlooked because of the nature of them?
Well, once you don't have a democracy or a governance of any rights or civil rights to back up, other than civic rights, there will be no transparency within those in your police force to protect you in law and order. As I said, and especially when there's an ideology of if you're gay, you're okay, that's abomination, you'll burn in hell. You know, that's amongst West Indian black men, that's a strong especially faith-wise. They're quite conservative in their thinking. So there was no transparency for any, and if a transgender got murdered, oh, he's a he, she. All right. Well, he got killed. Well, he was doing something wrong. You know, there was never any empathy. If someone got attacked or murdered, none was shown, other than within our community, it was shown. But outside of that, very few, any empathy was shown in the death of an LGBTQ person or the torture of one, you know, or the fact that, I mean, there are certain members were tolerated within their groups and they were allowed to be themselves and say, oh, that's just saucy pow, that's how she is, you know. But certain nights she had to be running for her life, because if she went the wrong alley and met the wrong guys, they will beat her in an inch of her life. So it was a double-edged sword for me, life, in being that open and enjoying. You just become a slave to the entire system, that you can't get any betterment. You have to parade yourself like this, right? And you have to entertain these people and do some very derogatory things for entertainment. And it just kills your spirit to live, and you're just living like out of a box, really.
Were you ever attacked or confronted for your
sexuality
publicly?
I was labelled a troublemaker, because anyone who stepped to me aggressively, it ended badly. I was not backing down. And as I look upon it now, as I'm older, there's some things I don't wish I walked away from. I wish I had the patience to walk away from. But it needed to happen. I got an altercation in bars where, with a lot of just enjoying myself, and some guy will just come up and say, oh, we don't like any bull men here, or we don't like faggots here. And I just walked away, but they followed me outside. And I tried to move away from it, but they followed, and a fight inbreded. I remember I was out with a friend, and we were having a good time, and four of them were just eyeing us. And the minute we went outside, they approached us. And as a scuffle happened with me and another guy, he stabbed me in my left leg, right in my thigh. I took that same knife out and I pulled it out and I stabbed him in the back. I was in jail for 3 days before they released me, after confirming all the stories and such.
Was the other gentleman, the one that had attacked you, was he?
Yeah. He went to hospital. He got questioned by the officer. And he went on his merry way, never charged. Yeah. Took 3 days after... fortunately, I was a regular at that bar. So a couple of people know me, and a few people were honest about what they seen. So that worked out. It could have gone a different other way. Because some people said, oh, I could have... Normally, when incidents like that happen, people say, oh, I didn't see anything, and turn away. Don't get involved. So I was quite fortunate on that day, because some other instances, I've seen it happen to friends where they've got into something like that and they've got an injury, scars for life. I mean, my friend got a cutlass, a machete, across his face. If he didn't turn, and he didn't see it coming, the guy had it within his trousers against a belt, and he pulled it out. If he didn't turn, it would have cut right into his forehead. Has a scar for life off of that. So yeah, it could have been worse.
Your friend, was he part of the LGBT community?
Yeah.
Was he a friend that you'd met through?
I met so much through a whole lot of homeless shelters, where it had a soup kitchen, we go and donate and help get food, or we go out asking for donations at certain charities I was working at. There was a Pacific charity. It's opened up, it's just 3 years old it is now, the Silver Lining Foundation. They assist with students, LGBTQ students within schools, and those that have been accosted at home by their parents or even within their communities. And that focuses on, because now there are so many youth that are coming out and having the freedom to come out, but the violence has increased as well, especially in schools. Because as you know, school children, they can be the meanest creatures on the planet when something is different from... So that's one of the charities I'm quite happy to see that's prospering from in the early days when I was in Trinidad and we started there, to see it prospering now. It's nice.
So there's hope for the next generation.
Yeah. I mean, a change is not going to come swiftly. First, the constitution has to be changed. Laws has to be reformed. I mean, there's a lot to be said about our politicians saying, yes, people have the right to be open and be who they are. But once you're not enacting those laws or making the progress in reforming these laws, which are so archaic, right, there won't be any progress. And there will always be they versus them. That's when it should be, it's all of us together. Right. And the factor that it comes across in my country, especially from the Home Office, that, oh, it's acceptable in Trinidad and Tobago to be gay. You can they Google it and they say, oh, well, yeah, it's accepted in Trinidad. I've said, well, you're not on my island. You're not there living in my to see it on the ground, at the grassroots, how it affects families, friends. It just impropriates. Families and friends from it. The disapprovations that happen, it lasts a lifetime. I mean, depending on if you can live within not having the right to be who you are, that's a question for a lot of people they settle with, and they say, okay, there's nothing else I can do. I'll just have to stay and keep quiet, keep to my side, and don't venture outside. Why do I need to stay in my corner? The whole island is for all of us. We can all be open. We can all do and be who we want to be. But as I said, it's only for the selected few. But if you really want to be free, you have to leave. Sometimes you have to leave home. Because sometimes home is, until it changes, right? And I don't know if that will happen in my time as another thing. And I can't wait for tomorrow. I need to deal with what's happening now. So for me, it was a process of, are you going to live your life or are you going to be constantly battling for your life, you know, defending yourself 24-0 for the rest of your life? And that was a no-brainer for me. I said, no, I need to go somewhere else where I can be me without looking behind my back 24 hours a day, having to worry about, oh, if the landlord finds out, he's going to put me out. Or if my boss finds out, you know, he's going to sack me. There's no, you know, worker protection for someone being gay. When they want to fight, they fire you. There's no rights. No, there's no civic rights to protect any gay person, gay or lesbian.
You said the violence is increasing. Do you still have contact and friends back home?
Yes, I do. I keep in contact with a lot of the affiliates and friends of the LGBTQ+ community in Trinidad and Tobago. And I think even since coronavirus happened, it was a bit of a surge in attacks against the LGBTQ community. And I think it's lowered now because of the pandemic and it's having its own constitutional reform with its other violence going on. So it's taken a back seat to the pandemic, but they're still doing the work, fighting the good fight. They're still in court currently right now. Our buggery law, which deemed two men having sex were jailed for 25 years imprisonment, was deemed unconstitutional in 2018, but it has not been repealed. They've tweaked it, and they've increased the age from 16 years old, right? And it's in the Privy Council pending because the government is appealing it, the decision from the judge saying it's unconstitutional. But the law still hasn't been repealed. But we have that much activists now within the Eastern West Indies, the Western part, and they're all coming together from Jamaica, from Barbados, from Belize, from Guyana, from St. Vincent, from St. Lucia. They're all coming together, and now they're questioning the buggery law and taking it to court. It's real great progress. I mean, Belize got that buggery law struck down.
So the community's got strength.
Yeah, but the government is appealing it. It's been struck down, but they're still appealing it though now. So we'll see how that goes. But that's a big victory though.
It's a step forward.
That's a step forward. So great gains are being made in the protesting, peaceful protests, and doing the work and sitting down with councillors and government MPs, and it needs to be dialogue. That's the only way this can happen. But willing dialogue on both parties. And you have that instance where you have the conservative part and the liberal part and the clashes especially with the church. So it's going to be a process, but I'm an optimist. As I said, it may not happen in my lifetime, but it will happen.
If you would like to get involved with the work of Report Out, please visit our main website at www.reportout.org, where you can subscribe to our regular email distribution list, which allows you to get exclusive access to our latest and exciting news, blogs, and projects. You can even donate to us to ensure that our work continues. We're also on all social media platforms, so please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn for regular updates on SOGSC human rights across the globe. Lastly, Report Out would like to give a huge thanks to all of our podcast interviewees and listeners for their valuable time and support. Your voices are no longer hidden, and when voices come together, they make us stronger as a movement.